Let's go, you two. Life's too short to spend in bed.
Dad, we'll meet you after breakfast.
No way, big guy. You two are gonna need a big breakfast. Looks to me like you two got 30 feet of driveway to shovel.
Oh, brother.
What's the matter, Larry? You're a young, healthy guy. Up and at 'em.
I can't just yet, sir. You know what I mean?
Oh, hey. Hey, you got a little stiffy? You young guys.
Your age. Then she met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, Pea Brain.
He's a closet.
Don't hurt me, please.
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman.
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer.
Hello and welcome to the Doom Show. I am Richard. I'm joined with the original American screamer, frickin' Jeffrey. Hello.
Greetings, Richard, from a small, snowy town in the heartland of America.
Oh, no. So, folks, before we even get started, we're not talking about The American Scream from 2012, the documentary about haunted houses.
Good film. Good film.
I do indeed enjoy that.
A lot of very sort of hopeless older men just whiling their days away. I can feel it. Yeah.
We know our kind, right?
Yeah. I wasn't no critique. just observation.
We meet twice a month. So, The American Scream, 1988, directed by Mitchell Linden, the creator and auteur of this.
Yeah, that's about it. He did do a little bit of camera and grip work, actually, yep, on things like Lone Star and the Beverly Hillbillies. And the Red Hot Chili Peppers Under the Bridge music video.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a bop, bop, whatever the fuck. That...
Nice. So, yeah, an interesting career. He went to after this, too.
I remember when that music video debuted on MTV, and it was such a huge deal. Then we all died. All of us. We screamed like Americans and died. This was written by Mr. Linden and someone named Phil Hopper. Phil Hopper was also one of the... he wasn't one of the producers. Sorry. He was the cameraman on Kamikaze Hearts.
Do you actually know that one?
No, it looks interesting.
Okay.
Is it a punk rock movie?
Looks it, yeah.
Tough and cynical veteran Mitch and her more naive yet eager partner Tigger are a couple of porn actresses involved in an intense lesbian relationship. Doesn't sound punk. Sounds more excitement.
Ooh.
Kamikaze Hearts, the Jeffrey and Richard story. I just laughed for no reason. I guess I didn't have an out. I had no out there. I outed myself. This was shot by Brian England, father of Robert England.
Really?
No. Cinematographer, this dude, he shot a lot of stuff. Like Friday the 13th, Part 8. The Supernaturals. Okay. Gate 2. My mom's a werewolf. Oh, I Madman Man.
Yeah.
I Madman Man. I Madman secret Christmas movie.
Is it really?
Ooh. Yep. It's like one of those blink and you'll miss it things. Like towards the end of the movie, they just run into like a library or a city hall or something, and there's just Christmas trees everywhere, and you're like, what?
Oh, did you mention cheerleader camp here?
No, I was about
that's
to.
That's a big one, yeah. That one and Larry Cohen's Wicked Stepmother.
Yes.
With Betty Davis and Colleen Camp.
Ooh. Oh, my God. I love Colleen Camp.
Yep.
Always. I have a copy of that somewhere. I need to watch that sometime.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen it. I just love Colleen Camp's face in the frickin' IMDb pictures. Just her, like, shocked face. Such a cutie. Ugh.
Indeed.
So anyway, I found no trailer for this, but I did find a VHS for this bad boy. And no, I don't own it, but the internet owns it.
It's very hard to find. I've found no live listings for it anywhere.
Wow. Well, it was put on. It was put out on InnoVid. Excuse me, Z InnoVid, a division of 21st Century Genesis Home Video Incorporated, which put out things like the Milpitas Monster and Bloodbath, that one with Carol Baker and Dennis Hopper. Just weird. Just weird stuff. Weird nice. Stuff. Ooh, they put out something called Demon Lust.
Hmm.
Want to know more.
Tell
I want
me
to
more.
Know more. Let's see. Demon Lust. Show me the picture.
Uh-oh. I think I broke the internet.
Hold on. This might be worth it. Oh, my God. The cover is hilarious. Just a guy peeping. It's Brink Stevens, so you know it's quality. Makeup FX wizard Tom Savini.
Okay.
It looks like a big pile of dog shit. But it was also put out by Video Outlaw.
Okay.
Wow. I've gone to very uninteresting places with this research. Snore. Anyway, the American Scream VHS, the tagline is, "It's a tradition." And here's the plot.
That's a question, though. What is the tradition that we are witnessing here?
Yes, we will definitely have the answers. Later, not on this episode. Here's the plot on the back. Everybody's average family, two unmanageable teens, a stress-riddled, bumbling father, and his ever-present, well, of course she's there, whining wife. Meet the Benzigers. They think they're taking a trouble-free trip to a mountain resort, .. Think again. This winter, Wonderland is a perfect setting for the evil rituals and unorthodox traditions that take place. This is no holiday. It's holy hell and no one has a prayer. A bloody transformation of roles turns the tortured teens into adults themselves. Spoiler. Some kids would kill to be adults. These kids may have to. Wow.
So that's the back of the VHS tape?
Yes, sir. InnoVid.
Because that's the only thing on eBay with regards to this movie is a original 1989 trade print ad promo.
Which
has basically the same blurb on the back of it. Suggested retail price, $59.95. Oh, yeah.
Wow. I'm actually looking in the reviews to see if anybody who worked on it, like, I was like, hey, I worked on this.
Yeah, sometimes you get that with these ones.
No, just awesome reviews. Good job, everybody.
The poster art is so great. And this trade ad is telling me that that a theatrical size poster is available. It's so good. I really want it. It makes it look like the kids are trying to murder their parents.
Yes.
Which is not at all what the movie's about, but they're just like sort of shrugging like it's a living or it's a tradition.
It's got a National Lampoon's look to it, which I think may have been one of the half inspirations. I mean, I don't want to get into 100%. Too much.
Yeah.
I wrote down a lot of inspirations for what like, who the fuck is responsible for this?
Like, the car sing-along is very much trying to be National Lampoon's Nightmare Vacation. Like,
oh my God.
Right from the start, for sure. the grossly comedic tone at points. The tone of this thing is all over the place.
Oh, boy. We're going to talk about that. The movie starts with some nice, long, drawn-out credits to eat up runtime. This is an 85-minute movie, and they are milking it with the frickin' credits. It goes on forever.
Well, the music here is done by a man named Richard Cox, and this opening title theme kind of sounds like a drunken, sleepy Law & Order theme.
That's kind of what I said. I said it's TV medical drama music.
Yes, but again, sleepy, and it had a few too many.
Did you see what else the music Richard Cox did?
No.
He was the composer on Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Wow. I mean, granted, I don't really remember much of the actual score from that because the soundtrack is so good.
Ditto.
Yeah, but good work. Good work, Cox.
I'm way overdue for a rewatch of that. I haven't seen that since my first time. Oh my God, I love that.
You've only seen that once?
Yep, that once, and it blew my fucking mind.
Yeah, it's the best. Loved it. It's so good.
So we cut to...
Well, let's talk about the... Can we talk about some of the cast a little bit?
Yeah, let's. It'll help us stay sorted out as we're discussing this shit.
Yeah.
Let's start with good old Ben Benziger.
Ben.
Ponsmar.
Yes.
The father.
So he's an actor. Yes. He's
surprisingly,
in
surprisingly, I really thought when I clicked on his credits, it was going to be a lot longer. He seems like one of those character actors that would just work a lot doing weird shit. Like, he didn't even know it was him. But no, he didn't really work that much. More of a...
I mean, his best role is clearly the puppet performance of Theodore Rex in the film Theodore Rex.
Is that the Whoopi Goldberg? Oh, geez.
You bet it was. You bet it was.
I've never seen that.
The most expensive straight-to-video movie ever made because it was deemed inappropriate to be released in theaters because it was such a disaster.
So
he also did a lot of the puppet performances in Dinosaurs, the TV series. Oh, wow. This is so cool. Anyway,
was he not the mama?
He was Fran Sinclair, which I think is the mama.
God, they made it look like him, too.
Yeah, so he played
like
the
if mama. You look at the character, it sort of looks like the actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he sort of he's got like a Matt Frewer vibe.
Matt Frewer.
Max Headroom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He looks a bit like that. Not in much, unfortunately. But he does. He looks it. He looks like somebody you've seen a lot. You're absolutely right.
But he
right.
plays the dad, the bumbling dad. He's really charming in this. When he's like, oh, fiddlesticks.
Well, he does that. He's very like old fashioned, like 50s dad. But then he also tries to keep up with the cool kid lingo. And he just embarrasses himself. It's good.
Oh, boy. I love him. We got Jennifer Darling, who plays his lovely wife, Barbara.
And when you click on her IMDb profile just has a giant CGI Garfield with his hand splayed open.
This is a voice actress now. Her man, she liked to work. Before she was a voice actress, she played Peggy Callahan in The Bionic Woman and $6 Million Man. But anime fans will recognize her because she did a voice. Whatever anime you've been watching, she did a voice. She's all over the place.
Wow, she's in so much.
Yeah. Holy crap. Some Disney stuff, too.
Yeah,
she works. But let's go back. Let's rewind before the voice acting. Let's have a look-see here. Oh, my God. She's almost always done voices. This is hilarious.
There's so much. 159 credits.
Wow. Good for her.
Yeah.
She probably retired. She's like, I gotta go. Thanks.
Wow. Well, good for her. I mean, she really knocked it out of the park in this one. So playing the role of Brent Benziger is Matt Boring Guy. Oh, I'm sorry. Borling Guy.
How dare you? This guy's pretty prolific actor as well. 56 credits. This launched his career.
Wow.
Auspicious. Or rather, he kept working. Yes.
Well, no, he was in Cannibal Hookers as well.
Ooh.
And The Dream Child.
Oh, shit. Man, that Cannibal Hookers box art is hilarious. It's just a butt. I will dance on your grave. Look at my butt. No, really. I toned it from all the dancing. Wow, 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 wow. Yeah, lots of TV work. Oh, my God. So much TV work.
Yeah, most exclusively. But still working
Days
today.
Of Our Lives. Days of Our Lives and The Bold and the Beautiful. Hello.
Yeah, he's recently in the Cobra Kai series. He's going to be in Stargirl series. So he's still working. Good for him.
Man, Cobra Kai, man. I don't know. I've never seen it.
The sister. So here's a problem I have. So there are other, that's 3/4 of our core family.
Yes.
Then we have Bridget Benzinger, who is the daughter.
Yep. Riley Weston.
Yes. Now here's the thing. I couldn't really keep her or her friend clear in my mind because they look pretty similar. Like they both have brunette hair. Is she the one who's flirting with the sheriff throughout the movie? Or is that
no? That's Roxanne.
That's Roxanne. Okay, yeah. So she's flirting. Well, not she's. Yeah, okay. She's the other one. Okay.
She ends up with the freaking redneck dude.
Yeah, I named him Greasy McSweat. I think. I think his name is. I wrote down his actual name.
Greasy McSweat.
His real name is Wilbur. Maybe.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. That sounds right.
So Riley Weston, is she in anything? No, not really.
More TV stuff.
Yeah.
Some indie films. She's still working.
One episode of Erie, Indiana as girl number one.
That's all you need right there. Classic.
You made it. Yeah.
Now we got to the friend of the families. The friends. We got two friends. Mm-hmm. Larry, who is my favorite character in any film ever. I really thought I was going to hate this character, and then he won me over.
He's another one who seems like he's in things, but he's not.
No,
like, he's actually not at all. He's a fight announcer in Teen Wolf 2, and he did some stunts in Alligator 2.
Good for him.
But yeah, he has one of those like faces that seems like you should have been blown up in the 80s. But maybe he just wasn't of age at the right point.
I like when he's described as demented in the movie.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Jean Sapienza is Roxanne. She's the friend. Mm-hmm. Again, did not work a lot. She's almost interchangeable for a long time in the movie. She and Bridget are interchangeable.
Yeah.
And then they start to kind of grow into themselves and become, people. But it takes a while.
The most famous member of this cast is our man and yours, George Buckflower.
Wowie, wow, wow. I never get tired of this guy, ever. He's great in Berserk, man. Because I saw Berserk for the first time.
Berserker.
And he is so good in that. Like, he's not so corny. He's silly. But
he's very,
wry.
Yeah, Ryan, unintelligible. Yeah,
but dude, no, my God, he's so amazing. 160 credits before he passed away. Whoa, whoa, wait a minute. He passed away in 2004, and he's showed up in a movie in 2018. So I think they found some archival footage to sneak into a movie.
Well, I would guess that was just a film that took forever to complete.
It is Dames and Dreams. Yeah. That's how Canada works. They bury something in the snow for 14 years, bring it out, and finish it.
Yeah, it's like a natural time capsule. Yeah.
Man, he's so good. Anybody else?
I mean, that's like our important cast. There is the pastor, who's pretty notable.
Yes.
Played by Blackie Dammit, which is
Blackie
a great
Dammit.
Name. Blackie Dammit. I described him in my notes as being like if Buster Poindexter was cosplaying as The Undertaker.
Oh, wait, are you talking about... Yeah, Blackie Dammit was... What was his character? He was
the pastor. Yeah. The man in black. Looks like The Undertaker.
See, I didn't know he was supposed to be pastor.
Oh, yeah. He's in the church. He like tries to kill Larry in the church.
No, I know the character, but like I just thought he was like just the man in black. Because I was going to...
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say he's obviously affiliated with the Thorn people from the Halloween movies.
Oh. Nah, too deep.
Nope, not deep enough.
Mm. Yeah, I think those are the big ones. Those are the biggies. There's some other people, but smaller importance. I mean, this movie's going to take us for a ride.
Oh, boy.
So let's get into it.
So we get introduced to the family as they're preparing to go to this vacation destination. But before we can get going, we have to have some wacky shenanigans.
Well, actually, I didn't realize that they had won, like, this was a contest that they'd won or something?
Apparently.
Yeah, that's what the back of the box said, but I didn't catch that in any of the dialogue.
Well, the what do you call it? The brochure they look at, like, promises them, like, an easy, fun time, getting away from their problems, whatever.
Which is weird, because where they are preparing to go does not seem to be a place that is like a tourist destination at all.
No.
Like, it's just a small town with a diner and a polka hall.
Like a logging town, and that's all there is to do in the whole town.
Right, it's not even like it's we've got skiing up there for the rich people, and we're just the townies down below. No, not really. It's just small town America.
Brant is interrupted by Larry, his friend, because he's spying on the lady across the way, the lady with huge hair.
I believe her name is Mrs. Gleason.
She has sex with the mailman every day, according to Brant.
Rain, sleet, or snow. They're doing it. And this mailman is disgusting.
He's a male porn star.
I mean, come on.
Get it? Mail.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Postman.
How hard would it have been for them to just cast someone who is like a handsome hunk of a mailman? No, this is like this greasy mustachioed.
You were unavailable, my friend.
Yeah,
you
guess I was that day.
So Brant the Rocker, as I wrote to him in my notes. He's wearing a t-shirt that is homemade that says, "Octung Kmart Shoppers."
That's actually awesome.
Fucking blew my mind when I read it. I was like, what?
He also has a cardboard standee of Mel Gibson as the Road Warrior.
Yes!
Yeah, he's cool.
That's it.
That's
room
his
is
whole
so bare.
Aesthetic, yeah.
Well, Larry helps him out by stealing his he checks the mail for the Benzigers and actually steals
his
report card.
Yeah,
to help him out. Apparently it's bad, but you know what, go ahead and give him the freaking bad report card. Do it, because these parents are way too sweet. Lietta called them a pair of Whos from Whoville.
Yeah, oh my god. They look at like without even the makeup, like the prosthetics.
Yes. Wow, let's just cast him in the fucking
damn.
Oh boy.
Larry also gets a glimpse up an accidental but then a happy glimpse up somebody's long,
I'm guessing, Roxanne
t-shirt.
Maybe Roxanne,
maybe.
I don't know,
they look identical.
Dude, I hate when people are like that, when they're like, dude, I couldn't tell who anybody was in the movie, and I'm like, well, just pay attention. People, I was paying attention. Yeah. I was writing freaking page of notes here trying to figure out who's who.
I mean, if they're standing side by side, I can tell which one is different. But at this quality and with that big a hair, I just can't tell. I can't tell.
Vinegar Syndrome. If you're listening, I know you're not, because you guys have self-respect. If you have a movie like this called The American Scream from 1988 and you want to release it, you should, because this should look better. This one of the things that added to when I messaged you, which I'll talk about at the end, part of my pain was watching this shitty copy. Trust me, I've seen some bootlegs in my time, y'all, but this was just hard to watch, especially as the tape got worse as we went along.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to mention the tone here at the beginning,
yep,
where it feels straight up like a, you know, like a sex comedy, or because the parents are there, you know, sort of like that National Lampoon Vacation type vibe. I mean, we have boobs 6 minutes in with Miss Gleason.
Yep.
And it seems like it's going to take that sort of goofy, raucous, sexy time tone. And it does for a little bit longer until basically we hit the road. And then it gets, and then like the comedy, which has been of a certain type up until this point, goes very different direction. So this is first noticeable when they're driving along and they see a hitchhiker on the side of the road. And they're like, well, should we stop? I don't know. And then one of them, I'm not sure, it's either the dad or the mom, says, who knows what kind of clown is out there?
And it's literally? Then,
yeah, we cut, and it's literally a hitchhiking clown with a sign that says, the joke's on you. And the characters actually read the sign, and they say, oh, the joke's on you. What's that mean? We don't know, because it cuts. And then we go to the sing-along, where they're singing... I don't even remember what they're
bottles
singing.
Of beer on the wall.
Oh, yeah, bottles of beer. So it goes back to like that National Lampoon type humor after it had just been very surreal.
Yeah.
And then it gets surreal horrific.
Oh, my Lord.
In the next scene where they're peeping. So the kids are all sitting in the back of the car and they don't have like seatbelts on, do they?
No, sir.
Yeah, it seems bad. And they are looking into the front window of the car behind them, which has a woman who is breastfeeding an infant, or trying to, because the driver, who is a creepy man, is trying to fondle her and then suckle on her as well.
Yeah, he wants some of what the baby's getting.
Exactly, and she does not want that. So no. She is fighting back against him, and then, you know, all this is happening while he's driving the car. And then for reasons we don't understand, the the front windshield is just sprayed with blood. And the kids are all watching this, and they go like, ah! And then it cuts to them rolling into town.
Oh, my God.
There's so no weird. Follow-up. No and the follow-up.
The tone never recovers. Like, the tone problems just continue through the whole movie.
I mean, I wouldn't call them a bug. I'd call them a feature.
Yes. The I do want to mention and just play a little sample of the weird song. They play this, like, weird rockin' song. That I could not understand the lyrics no matter how much I tried to stare at the TV and listen. So I'll play a little bit of this weird. It's the only song in the movie that isn't that has lyrics other than one later, which it's they're not even worth mentioning, but the song just added to my confusion. I don't know. They arrive at their destination. Mom hilariously has a complete meltdown. And I'm like, what is this going to be? What is her problem? And the thing is, she's so impressed and happy by what so they found in this shitty little town. It's so good.
Yeah, she's just weeping. Yeah. You know, it's real America. And sometimes it's just a sensual overload.
Oh, my God. We've all been there.
There is a little bit of foreboding here as well. The townsfolk very unmenacingly are waving at them as they roll in. And, one of the kids says, I feel like we're expected. Dun, dun, dun. They are. Kind of, I guess.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick. I was just glancing at the postman. The guy who plays the sexy postman that you found so attractive in this movie.
Yeah.
It's Joe Charbonic. He is a director and occasional actor and producer of things, but he directed The Watcher, the Keanu Reeves serial killer movie.
Jesus. Now I don't feel bad for calling him repulsive.
Marissa Tomei and James Spader.
Jesus Christ.
I have never seen that.
I have seen it. I saw it back when it came out on video. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, and I definitely rented it. I had never before stopped watching a movie and then like returned it before I'd finished it. But that was the first time. It'll go down in my memory as that.
Now you're encouraging me to watch it. Oh. So we go to the diner in town, the weird diner full of old weirdos.
Yep.
And that's when we see good old George Buckflower arguing with the waitress who doesn't want to give him any more cholesterol.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't want to give children coffee either.
Oh my God. They want to give hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Which honestly, I would not fight that hard. I'd be like, okay, I would just pour some of my mom's coffee into my hot chocolate and I'll be good to go.
So this scene is going to get really crazy in a moment. But before that, there's a dialogue exchange between Brent and Larry, which is insane. And I need you to help me figure it out, because I decided not to go back and try to like figure out the context. I would just quiz you.
Okay.
So Brent says, quote, "Smells so good, my nose is getting erect." And Larry says, "Come on now, don't blow it." What was it that smells so good? Is it the food at this place?
I think they were just talking about the food, honestly.
Okay. They didn't have food arrive yet, though, I don't think. I guess it was just in the air.
Dude, this movie, man.
Okay.
There's going to be a lot of that. I like these quizzes, though. So mom and dad get distracted. Dad, I don't even know what the hell he's doing. But
he steps outside to go
make a phone call.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got to check up on work. Mom has the evil waitress spill coffee on her, and then so she goes to the bathroom, and while the kids are alone, the camera work just goes crazy. The music goes crazy. They're focusing in on people's gross-looking food that's there's churning around on their plates.
Yeah.
Everything just goes bonkers.
What was most notable for me here is the audio special effects of the like slobbering townsfolk.
Yeah.
It reminds me of not an audio visual reference, but it reminds me of the scene in James Joyce's Ulysses, the chapter where the men it's the Circe chapter where
yes!
the men sort of turn into pigs and they're just like eating disgustingly. It's exactly like
you know what it is it reminds me of? It reminds me of the chapter that goes from like the origins of English and goes up through like poetry and like iambic pentameter. It's also unpleasant to sit through, just like that chapter of Ulysses.
Yeah, that one's the toughest one.
Oh,
yeah,
brother.
Well, during this, George Buck Flower comes up and wanders over, just sort of nonchalantly shambles over and fondles, I guess this must be Roxanne's hair.
Yep.
And then she just lets him do it.
And then she gets like traumatized, and this like comes back to haunt her later, this moment.
No, they don't really think or talk about it after that.
No. No, she sees him again in the mirror later, stroking her hair.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
This is about trauma, dude.
But they don't say anything in the moment or to their parents when they return within the same scene. It's just like, well, these things happen in small towns.
Yeah, I don't think they ever broach the subject with the parents about how fucking weird this town is. Not that I remember.
I mean, here's the thing,
they're very resourceful.
Parents just don't understand, so why bother?
When a couple of guys were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood, got in one little fight, my mom got scared, says, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air.
Keep going.
Crisscross, make you want to jump.
Crisscross, applesauce.
OPP, you know me."
So they leave the diner.
Song.
Find food at Millie's. And Dad and George Buckflower get into a car kicking off.
Oh my God. So they want to get his... this is the best fucking shit ever. They're sitting right next to him. They're like one car length sideways. Not even a full length car between the two vehicles.
Yeah.
And in order to get Ed's attention, Dad starts blaring his horn. Doesn't roll down the window and say hello. So George kicks his tire, and then Dad jumps out and like, "Oh yeah, you like that? What if I kick that?" And that's when George calls out Old Blue, who's been there the whole time.
Yeah. Who he's been talking to, because it's his only friend. It is a taxidermied dog. that just has its head sticking out of the window of his terrible little jalopy. Yeah.
Oh man, this would be so charming if it was in a different movie.
It's even more charming when George starts like gnashing his teeth, pretending to be his own dead dog.
Yes. I think they're in Twin Peaks.
I mean, yes, this very much feels like that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that sort of weird, sort of nightmarish stuff mixed with the broad, almost slapstick comedy. Yeah. Simon, you need to watch this one.
Yes. Sam, the sheriff, shows up, who's an actor who played nothing and nothing else.
Mm.
And he intervenes, and we're going to see a lot of Sam later when he and someone have a little tryst.
Do we see any of it? Does he even take his shirt off? I don't think he does.
I think he does. We get to see the sides of his shoulders, which is the most erotic portion of any human being.
So he... Okay, so it's definitely Roxanne who he...
Yes, it is okay. Not the sister. The sister does not end up with the sheriff.
Okay, then I think... Okay, that's fine.
We could both be wrong. We could both... be talking one about two them. Different films.
One of them. Anyway, the important part is that he's like 45 years old.
Yes. but he's the youngest guy in town.
I mean, yes, that is actually true. They make note of that.
Oh, boy.
Little detail to keep in mind. He does diffuse the situation by saying that George's whole family was killed in a car accident. He has a metal plate in his head now, so he doesn't like loud sounds like a horn beeping. Mm. He also has, quote-unquote, the eyes of a child.
Aw. No, the metal plate is why the Tommyknockers can't get him.
Ooh.
Ooh, there you go. It's
a feature, not a bug.
Same. So they finally get to the cabin where they're going to stay, and Larry and Brant almost get into a fight over who's going to have the bed, because Brant... just is so sick of Larry's shit that he just prefaces it with, like, look, dude, I'm gonna kick your ass. You're not taking my bed. That big, nice, comfy bed is mine. Da, da, da. And then Larry goes completely batshit crazy, pulls out a butterfly knife, which he whips around, which is pretty much all they're good for, and then frickin' puts the knife to his throat and is like, I'm gonna cut you, motherfucker!
I'll cut you.
It's great.
And then he's like, just kidding.
That is the moment that made me fall in love with Larry. When he's like, just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love
which, that. Which, I mean, I think he actually does sell in the performance. Like, no, he was not just kidding.
He was going to fucking kill his best friend over this stupid bed.
Yes.
What are you doing?
What do you mean, dude?
I mean, what are you doing on my bed, dude?
Come on, Brent. I found it first. I'll tell you what. I'll flip you for it.
Larry, look. I'm warning you, all right? Don't fuck with me. I mean, you're always starting this shit, and I'm gonna kick your ass this time.
Don't fuck around, man! I'll cut you so fucking fast you never seen it coming, motherfucker! Hey, relax, man. I was just kidding. Go ahead, take the bed.
No, that's okay. You take the bed.
Oh, here's another weird scene where Brent just says, it's very crude, so I won't totally say it. Well, I'll change it. I'll make it a PG-13.
Please do.
Ain't seen much in the way of kitty cat in town.
Meow.
And right after this, Larry spots a woman running for her life from the pastor or the man in black in the woods. And... that's it. They don't comment upon it. The scene cuts to something else.
Nope. He tries to convince him he saw something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Fuck that. Enough. We need to get to Polka Night. Be there or be square, as the sign says. Man, I love this. When they get to Polka Night, Dad and Mom bust out of their like overcoats because, you know, it's cold. This is a snowy place. They bust out of their coats and he's wearing full on frickin' Lederhosen. She's got on like a dress that like fits in perfectly with Polka Night. Mm. Oh, by the way, before we forget, this is a secret Christmas movie.
Is it?
All of the decorations on the windows at the diner all say Merry Christmas.
Oh, wow.
It's decked out. I just remember that. So there you go, perfect. Folks. Put perfect. That in your bong and take a toke on it.
Put that in your bonnet and keep it safe.
If y'all are speaking my bongwidge... light up a single individual doobie right now. So, I love the Lederhosen, da da da. Oh, yeah, Brant. Oh, my God. Brant goes to pee.
As you do.
He and Larry agree the music sucks.
He drank too much hot chalky, and now you gotta go pee.
Gotta go wee wee. He goes to the bathroom, and the fucking most amazing shit. This dude just stares at his dick for the entire sequence. sense.
Yeah, this older man in plaid, like middle-aged man in plaid, just follows him in and like just sidles up to the urinal, does not start doing any like peeing business himself, just stands there and is looking down at Brent's crotch with raised eyebrows while the scene cuts back to like polka stuff. But then it comes back and Brent is so uncomfortable, he goes into one of the stalls, but the man immediately follows him. It just stands outside the locked door.
Holy shit.
It's honestly a pretty unnerving scene. You know, I think it cuts to the essence of the sometimes uncomfortable atmosphere of men's bathrooms.
If you're trying to lose a few pounds and butter is out, you're going to love this.
Molly McButter.
Now you can shake on the taste of butter for just 4 calories.
Molly McButter.
New Molly McButter natural butter flavor sprinkles. The taste of real butter with only 4 calories per serving. A very wholesome 100% natural 4 little calories. So indulge yourself.
Molly McButter.
You got Molly now.
So Larry saves the day because the guy kicks open the door, which bloodies frickin' Brant's nose. Larry tackles the guy. They fight. He's about to get murdered. Larry is about to get strangled to death. And Brant kills the guy with the toilet tank cover. And I wrote in my notes, seriously, what is this movie?
Yeah.
What is going on in this fucking movie? Well, meanwhile, Sam, the cop, and his buddy, the greasy guy, take Roxanne and Bridget and go off to a strip club.
Well, that's how you schmoozin'.
They go off to the Bang Bang Bar.
Wine and dine. The bada bing. Okay, so I gotta go back a little bit, because the order of events in this sequence, I'm gonna call it, because it's more ambitious than a scene, when Larry saves him is bizarre, because it all happens like within an instant. This man forces open the stall door and it knocks Brent on his ass into the toilet water.
Yes.
Real gross. But then Larry is just there immediately jumping on the guy's back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I guess somehow Brent got a bloody nose there. But at the end of it,
the door hit him.
They jump to the conclusion, somebody's trying to kill us, man. That is not the conclusion that I would jump to based upon what he just experienced in this bathroom. Someone is trying to I don't know, hook up in the bathroom maybe, but kill you?
I just don't know. I just don't know what's happening.
Dad also at the once Larry and Brent leave the head, as they call it, the bathroom.
Yes.
They are polka mosh pitted. Yes. And Dad says, they're slam dancing, honey. And the mom says, how cute.
It is weird. They're trying to leave and they can't. But instead of like focusing on it, like showing like this weird, like artsy scene of them, like a darkly comic thing, like in a artsy movie where they would show them trying to leave and like the film of their uncomfortable faces and sweating and like getting bloodied. No. They just literally show them having difficulty leaving, make a joke about it, and then we move on. It's so weird. So they want to go find the girls. So they go, like, well, there can't be that many places in this town. Let's go to the strip club. At the strip club, I'm going to play this commercial because I'm very curious. I was wondering what Matilda Bay is. Apparently, Matilda Bay is a wine cooler, but then the slow motion takes it over.
Okay.
This is fucking weird.
So strange. So Brent and Larry are standing outside of the strip club because they just decided not to go walk in the door, I guess. They are miming banging on the windows of the strip club, trying to get the attention of their sister and friend, right?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe the sheriff. Well, no, they don't seem to like ever want to talk to the sheriff. Okay, so problem here. Number one, why are they simply miming banging on the windows rather than actually banging on the windows?
Or going inside.
Number two, what kind of strip club has windows?
Yes. And then the other weird thing is, well, they're trying to save them because the sister and her friend are sitting there and Greasy and Sam, the sheriff, are walking towards them with a broken bottle. because they were just breaking up a fight. These two guys were fighting in front of the jukebox because one guy claimed he knew some famous guy, and then he admits that he only saw him on TV, and that inspired this fight. Break up the fight, and they have this broken bottle. They're walking towards the girls, and then it's just like the most punishing slow-mo ever. You could pause the VCR, and it would be faster than this slow motion.
I was watching this at like 1.2 speed, and it was still very slow.
whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean? You watch these movies like on fast forward?
When I'm taking notes, yeah.
Oh, so you'd seen it before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it, and you don't ever tell me you do that again. I don't like that. That's not fair. I watch this shit in real time, motherfucker.
That's your mistake.
Next time, you and I will watch everything at 0.75 speed. We'll watch everything.
Slow it down.
Or in the case of this movie, 0.0001 speed.
Listen, I'm a thorough preparer, and sometimes that means you gotta cut corners.
All right. I am a thoroughbred horsey. So, there's a guy coming after a man with a baseball bat or just a rake or something. I don't know what. But he's going to kill good old Larry and Brant. And then he gets beheaded. He gets beheaded by Ed. Our turns out he's a hero of the movie.
This is George Buckflower we're talking. Yes. I don't think we've actually said his name.
Yeah, he's Ed. And the head goes flying through the air and lands on some spikes and smiles at the girls.
Yeah, okay, so, it's so confusing. Where are these spikes?
I don't know.
What are these spikes?
But it did a reverse shot where they had the head on these spikes and then whipped it away with the strings and then just ran it backwards so it looks like it really awkwardly lands on the spikes.
Well, the girls see this, they run away into the forest, and they bump into the boys who are also in the forest. Then you would think something would happen there, but nope. They talk for a minute, and then we cut to the morning after.
Where we get the most important scene in the movie. The audio from this will be at the beginning of the episode, I guarantee you.
This is Larry's a little stiffy. Yeah. That is what Dad says when he is going in to wake them up in the morning.
As if this movie needed to be weirder tonally.
So Larry is pointing out, as we've sort of gotten the idea, that there's no kids in town. The man in black, the pastor, shows up to give Larry back his knife, which I guess he dropped at some point.
Yes.
Though he didn't use it. What else?
Dad falls apart.
Oh, yeah. Dad falls apart. That's a good scene.
So, Dad wants them to shovel snow, and as he's talking to his son, this disgusting amount of snot, it just goes body horror for no reason, like snot pouring out of his face, like this impossible amount of snot is pouring out of his face, and then his fucking ear comes off.
Well, we get a good visual pun at the beginning where Brent says, "Spit it out, Dad," and he says, "Sure, son," and he spits out a tooth.
That was so weird. This movie, man, because I can take weird, obviously, and I can take stupid, like, parodies of horror films, and I can take, like, artsy stuff. When you put all three of them together, my mind just doesn't know what to do. This is very, very, very...
So, yeah, because in any other movie, you would see a scene like this where, you know, his dad starts bleeding from the top of his head. Yep. While he's sitting there talking normally, be like, oh, this is like a weird dream nightmare scene. But when you're watching this movie, you think, it's just really happening, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or establish that Brant has hallucinations. That's the way they could have played this. They could have played it like Society, where you see all these hallucinations.
Right.
And then it turns out that, holy shit, this shit's happening.
And that's kind of how they want to play this. They have it be just like, you know, Brent's vision hallucination, but we don't know why, like what's causing it.
Yep.
Yeah, and it doesn't recur. It doesn't come back, you know.
So Larry and Brant are shoveling snow as they're supposed to shovel this really long driveway as part of their vacation. And they get into a shovel fight. They're arguing over God knows what. And they start fighting as Larry's a little bit of a spitfire there. It goes a little fucking crazy again. And they're fighting. And that's when Ed, Buck Flower guy, shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to fall asleep. This is my first viewing. Last night was my first viewing. And as soon as we get a flashback to what happens, quote unquote, to Ed's family, the next thing I know, there's people bleeding. The camera has fallen over sideways and we're watching someone get murdered. And Lietta goes, "Are you asleep?" And I'm like, "Yes." I sat up and I only missed like a couple minutes, but what the fuck?
So, yeah, the movie, when Ed, George Buckflower, tells his story to the boys, it turns into a Super 8 home movie.
It's like Sinister Part 2.
Yeah, it is, actually. Just like that. or it's like a chill wave music video.
Yeah.
Like, it's supremely chill. It's more slow motion, right?
That's why I fell asleep.
And the score is, like, droning. It is... Mm-hmm. Bizarre, downright bizarre. And the I'm very confused about about everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. But like I guess the perspective is like he's holding the camera, you know, George Buckflower, and then we're seeing his family being murdered, but we don't really know by whom or why.
I'll tell you what, you know what it feels like? It feels like the director had this is a home movie he made, like it's a like he wanted to shoot like a found footage style movie back in the 80s.
For sure. Yeah, it feels like a short film.
Exactly.
Or just like some test footage, because the dog in it is not his dog. No. It's a different dog. It's like a golden retriever. Yeah, it's so weird. Like, do we know any of the actors in this scene? Are they people who are not in the movie otherwise?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's hard to tell because the footage is so shaky. But I was wondering if any of them...
None of them are credited as anything.
Okay. It's...
Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. Yes. So Ellen Simpson, his wife, and Eric Simpson, his son, and Eve Simpson. So, yeah, these people are actually credited. Okay. Oh, my God.
That's bizarre, yeah. Okay. So that happens. and then the villagers come out of the woods to shoot George Buckflower in the scalp. Not in the head, but in the scalp.
Yes.
So and then the boys, we cut.
Oh, yeah, this is good.
Because the girls are walking and chatting in the woods about nothing of importance. Yes. And they run into the breastfeeding couple from the opening of the movie.
Yep.
Who are lovingly wiping barbecue chicken wing sauce into each other's faces. I guess, are they supposed to be eating the baby?
Yes, they're supposed to be eating the baby. Because they find they're doing, this is the best thing ever, they're doing snow angels in a fucking graveyard.
Hell
which
yeah.
is like, that would be a great reveal in a, like a really dark comedy where these two friends are doing snow angels and it pans out and they're in the middle of a graveyard. Perfect. But they find a baby doll, like literally a doll, not a fake baby, a doll.
Yeah.
And they freak out and they run. That's when they see the lady and her husband, presumably her husband, eating the child. Uh-huh. And yeah, so barbecue sauce. That's great.
Wait,
delicious.
But is the doll supposed to be the actual baby?
They react to it like it was the dead baby. Seriously.
Because you don't give like an infant a baby doll. They can't play with it yet.
No. Yep.
Oh man, that's weird.
So it cuts back to Larry and Brant burying the dead Ed, and they use Old Blue as the marker, as a grave marker, which actually has a great joke that pays off later. I was really surprised. That made me laugh out loud later. Then the truck ride happens, so
yeah.
The girls sneak onto the back of a truck filled with hay,
mm-hmm.
and they go for a ride, and they're just talking and, like, not cuddling, but, like, you know, like friends would just, like, stare into each other's eyes while they're talking, like you and I have done on many occasions in the hay rides.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such another scene that my brain cannot comprehend, because it turns into this sweet, but, you know, tinged with a little strangeness of them riding off into the fading light of the day. And the car that they're filming, like the car that the camera is attached to starts to slow down and the scene is fading to black and the car is slowing down and pretty soon the girls are out of sight and it cuts to black. And I'm like, what the fuck?
It's a end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They got out. Well, they then are attacked by, like, Evil Dead attacked by ropes and hands that just pop out of the hay.
Yeah, the chains and stuff. It's so weird. God, I mean, I think I need to stop saying so weird because that's all I know. I don't know what to say anymore.
Well, the teens do all get back together at one point soon after this.
At Ed's house.
And they say, I think it's Larry says, I'm starting to think this is an adolescent paranoid fantasy. Which, that might be the best way to sum this up.
So they're at a hotel, and one room is Ed's room where he lives, and the room next door, dun dun dun, is the killer pastor's room.
Uh-oh.
Where he's got this woman, the woman we saw earlier being chased around, actually strung up in the bathroom. The boys get philosophical, and it's the everything is so weird. Then they find the pamphlet and they're reading the pamphlet that shows like, oh, get rid of your children and be free and life is good. If the tape wasn't so warped at this point in the movie, I could have paused it and actually read what the pamphlet really says.
Yeah.
But we get the tracking problems and the sound warping and like my brain is being squished into 50 million fucking pieces.
That now the movie's starting to make sense, right?
Yeah, dude,
we get it. It's all coming together.
Yeah, dude,
that's a good movie.
Oh boy. They decide, this is the turning point of the movie here, where the kids decide to stop being kids. They decide to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
To instead of trying to beat the adults, they decide to join them,
to be the adults.
Yes, don't beat be. And this, I love this whole thing. Like now the girls dress up like proper young ladies to go back to the bar, the old hoedown. Frickin' Brant puts on a poncho, draws a little mustache on his lip, and he's going to go and pretend to be the musician that they're waiting on. He's going to be the guitarist because he has his heavy metal guitar he's going to whip out. And then frickin' Larry dresses like the preacher. This quartet of weirdos is so amazing. The girls' plans aren't as good. Basically, Roxanne's plan is to fuck the sheriff. Mm-hmm. And Bridget's plan is to murder the greasy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Oh, before I forget, the joke was with the dog. Mom and Dad are driving past where they buried Ed under and put the dog as his gravestone. And it's because it's covered with snow, they think it's a snow dog, like a snowman. I've never seen one in that shape before. That made me laugh out loud. That actually made me laugh out loud.
They're simple parents.
So we go to the bar where we have our little showdowns of sorts. Where Larry starts drinking with the pastor, the evil pastor. Brant starts playing heavy metal guitar. Frickin' What's-Her-Face has sex with the sheriff. And then the other girl shoots good old greasy guy with a shotgun. She actually gives him a choice when she points the shotgun in his head. She says, pick a window. Which windows his brains are going to go flying out of.
Actually pretty cool.
Yeah, no, and this is the best part of the movie. The movie, for me, was like spiraling out of control, but this shit at the end, they brought it. Like they actually brought the weirdness.
Yeah.
Ugh. Especially when Larry takes on the frickin', they go to the church and he fights with the pastor and wins. Honestly, now Jeffrey, you know I am a sexy guy who likes to watch sexy movies.
Oh yeah.
When he pinned the pastor guy on the floor and you couldn't see what Larry was doing, and he was stabbing. I think this was intentionally meant to be funny. He's stabbing the guy to death, but he looks like he's being stabbed somewhere else. Like he looks shocked in a
Yeah, his eyes are like rolling in the back of his head. He's going, "Whoa!"
I'm so glad you saw that too.
Mm-hmm.
this movie, dude. So then some shit happens. My notes have stopped already.
Oh, well,
so.
We have the best, the second best. I do like the car death the best. But the last one is, Brent had gone electric at the polka dance and really upset the old people.
Yes.
Right. Yes. And so he's standing outside, and who comes up to confront him but the waitress with the hot chocolate. And she says, "What the hell was that shit, boy?" And Brent responds, "That was rock and roll."
What the hell was that shit, boy?
That is rock and roll, bitch.
And the waitress hates young people and new ideas, and she holds a gun up to Brent, but he manages to cap her first, shooting her right in the forehead.
Which is funny because she shoots him first but misses? Because the idea was, yes, I thought she shot first, and then of course he blows her away. But man, what a statement.
Well, I mean, she is shooting him from 3 feet away. There's no reason she should have missed.
I know. But he falls down like he got shot. It's a fake out.
Yeah.
But man, what a statement. Mm. But can we talk about Brandt some more? Can we talk about this actor some more? He's like, oh my God, he's like a freaking cardboard, like a dirty cardboard box, like glued together in the shape of Johnny Depp around this era. What the fuck? And he delivers lines like fucking eating a pizza. Like he's... God, I love
would describe him as stoic. Yeah, he's stoic. Well, I mean, I'll say that he ran the risk. I don't know why the director and the scene decorator allowed this to happen, but he was nearly upstaged by that Mel Gibson cardboard standee in the earliest scene of the film.
Yeah,
he's an interesting fellow for sure.
What the fuck? Larry just runs circles around him. I just love Larry.
He does.
So
he really does. He becomes sort of the star. So the next day, the parents wake, rise and shine, and leave for home by themselves. And I guess we are supposed to either believe that they were trying to get rid of the kids, or they just sort of got sucked into the weird, you know, brain hypnosis of this town and don't remember that they have kids to bring with them, but they leave without their kids and they seem perfectly happy.
Yep.
Our final scene is at the diner, where we see that Brent is the sheriff now, right? Yep. Larry is the pastor. Mm-hmm. One of the girls is the waitress and the other is, I don't know, somebody. But that does make me wonder what happened to the sheriff.
Yeah, she had sex with him. She took away his male power.
Oh, do you absorb him when you do that?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So they are the adults now, right?
Oh, boy.
And credits. We're done. as the credits roll, we get a Randy Old Man song playing.
Yep.
Not Randy Newman, but Randy Old Man. I was trying there. It didn't really work. That's okay.
Close
That's our
enough.
Film. That's our film. Did you scream?
I'm just going to go first and talk about how we like this, if that's okay with you.
Go ahead.
I got something to say.
Oh, boy.
This was 85 minutes that felt like 210 minutes. This, and a lot of it, honestly, has to do with the quality of the copy we've scored of this fucking movie that sounds like we made it up. This is a real movie. This was taxing to sit through. Had I not been taking notes, that would have helped too. This, I wrote in my notes, watching this made my face hurt. I love the tone, whatever it is. I love the message, whatever it's supposed to be. It's jaw-droppingly insane, confusing as fuck. It reminded me of Horror House on Highway 5, another movie with terrible tone problems.
Mm-hmm.
Although not related at all, just that's the only thing I could think of. I asked you, because I couldn't remember what titles of any movies were. I was like, how did you find a film weirder than Runaway Nightmare? but this doesn't feel like it took years to finish. This feels like it took minutes. This was shot in real time.
I mean, you're assuming that it's finished.
Oh, hey, we'll see. I wrote some things I thought inspired this film. Definitely David Lynch inspired these guys. John Waters, I think, inspired these guys. Mm. Like polyester, maybe. Mm. Yes, National Lampoon's, like we discussed earlier. But then, somewhere along the way, Roberta Findlay stepped in to be their muse. That might just be because I watched Primeval again for the first time in a long time right before this. I like this movie. I would actually watch it if it gets a proper release someday.
Yeah.
I would never watch this copy again. Abysmal VHS rip. How about you? Well,
here's hoping that it does receive release it deserves. Totally. I mean, I think that it would definitely help. I do think that there is like an actual movie here with like an interesting sort of weird and surreal idea. And I think it is sort of lost a little bit in the very, very poor quality of the transfer. I like it a lot. Nice. I'm a big fan of this one. It feels so arbitrary and inexplicable and tonal whiplash. I love that. And it's also, you know, at the same time as it's so bonkers, it's so sleepy too, which I love. I love those sort of sleepy, somewhat hallucinogenic movies, which this one does. It pretty regularly features a scene that just kind of blows your mind. I mean, the Super 8 home movie is, when that happened the first time I watched it, I think like my jaw dropped. I was like, what is happening? I'm a big fan of this one. I stand for it. I hope that it does receive that release in some form or another, or that somebody listed on eBay and I can just buy my own VHS copy. I'll be happy with either result, but I think more people should see this for sure. I think most people will hate it, and that's good. I think they should.
Nice. I'm seriously considering making my own t-shirt. This is Octong Kmart Shoppers.
any handwriting will be better than his.
Yeah. That's glorious. Yeah, it looked like he made it with shoe polish in his freaking hand. Yes. Classic.
Oh, you know what? He looks like he smells like shoe polish.
And tastes like it.
Ooh.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you for picking this.
I don't know if I picked it. I told you I watched it and that it was great, and I think you just added it to our list. So I'm going to blame you.
You know, here we go again. We can never figure out who's responsible.
But I'll take credit. I'll take credit. It's a great movie. Please do. I love it.
Anytime you love it, I get scared now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you would why you agreed to this.
It always comes back to being my fault.
Yep.
So, folks, thanks for listening. Please scream only in American if you can.
Yes. Get your hot chalky.
Did you say Hot Topic?
Get your hot chalky. Go to the Hot Topic.
Hot Topic, land of the free. Hot Topic for you and me.
Hello, This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.
If you enjoyed this show, then make sure you check out the other great shows on the Legion Podcast Network, like Cinema Psyops, Cinema Beef, Devour the Podcast, Duncan and Bo Come Correct, Exploding Heads Horror Movie Podcast, Friday the 13th, Get Slayed, The Helming Power Hour, Hello, This is the Doom Show, Hero Hero Ghost Show, Kill the Cast, Underwater Kaiju from Outer Space, Jerry Hates Action, Legion After Dark, Mental Health, Obsessive Cinema, Discourse, Pick Six Movies, The Podcast by the Cemetery, The Podcast on Haunted Hill, The Psychosemantic Podcast, Rick Radio, House of Wax, Dude Looks Like the 80s, Rabbit and Red Radio, The Shadecast, Short Bus Cinema, Two Drink Minimum Commentaries, The VD Clinic, Who Will Survive Horror Podcast, and Witch vs. the Doomsday Clock. With such a widespread of shows, there is guaranteed to be a niche for you to fall in love with. Horror, politics, movies, books, sex, music, commentaries, health, video games, kaiju, action, news, comedy, and opinions that would most likely get you killed in some parts of the world. We are proud to bring you some of the best podcasting in the world. Check us out at www.legionpodcast.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, and any other dark corner of the internet where podcasts can be found.